the way that we work and the way that we think are very similar, and I'm very lucky to have a relationship with Necho that brought me into this room today. So I'm required to tell you that I have no personal financial relationships with any commercial interests relevant to this presentation. Now on to the more interesting stuff. Leadership for Healthy Communities is a national program office of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. I'm sure many of you know that RWJF committed to reversing the childhood obesity epidemic by 2015 and is providing significant investments across the nation to help do this. And RWJF, like CDC Achieve Grants, thinks about strategy in terms of changing policies, school and neighborhood settings, and corporate practices in ways that make communities healthier. So again, we're talking about that systems change way of thinking. In particular, they funded Leadership for Healthy Communities to focus on local, state, and tribal government leaders. So we work on policy change at that level. We support state health officials, state legislators, mayors, local health departments, you get the idea, elected and appointed officials at the local and state level from across the nation to make policy change. And we do this in a number of ways, but one of the most significant is through grants to associations of policymakers, groups like NACHO. And so we've been very happy to have that relationship and to see the changes that NACHO has brought about by supporting communities in these efforts, just like all of our other grantees. So with that out of the way, I'd love to talk to you kind of broadly and contextually about this issue of childhood obesity, where we fit in, and what policy change means when we're talking about childhood obesity. So just some real basic numbers. I'm sure a lot of you guys have heard this before, but it's always good for context. Nearly 1 in 3 children and adolescents in the U.S. is obese or overweight today. We've seen the trends. This starts in 1985, and you'll see all the whites and light blues showing very low prevalence of obesity in 1985 among adults. And then we look at 2009, and we've got a lot scarier colors on this chart. The fact is that the obesity trend is rapid, and it's a crisis. And so this is where we're at, and this is what we're dealing with. And we're past the point of individual interventions. We need to think systems when you look at a map that looks like this. We know there are social costs to obesity. We know that obese children have increased risk of diabetes, cardiovascular disease, asthma, sleep disordered breathing, depression. They're more likely to be bullied. They're more likely to be absent from school. There's correlations to lower academic achievement, all sorts of scary stats out there. And this one, this is the key point. Today's children may be the first generation to live sicker and die younger than their parents. We also know that this is a really costly epidemic. Employers lose roughly $73 billion per year due to absenteeism, healthcare services, and productivity. $344 billion in 2018 is the estimated cost. We also know that there's disparities out there. This epidemic isn't hitting people equally. It's hitting certain race and ethnic groups more strongly. It's also hitting low-income populations and residents in the southeast region of the United States and rural areas particularly hard. So that means that these are the communities where we need to be focusing our effort. So going back to policy, we know that there's barriers that prevent people from living healthy lives, that prevent them from having access to places to play and places to get healthy foods. And so policymakers, hopefully there's some of you in the room, health department officials, can pass policies to remove these barriers and provide access to the tools that address that. So what are those barriers? Well, we know that kids spend hours a day in school, but they're not given opportunities to be active in school. The rates for daily PE, incredibly low. We're starting to see that change. We're starting to see more PE and PA, physical activity in schools, but certainly not enough. We know that kids need safe places to play in their neighborhoods. Basketball courts that look like that don't lead to places or opportunities for kids to really be safe. Sidewalks that look like that don't help kids walk to school. This is in San Antonio a number of years ago, and have to applaud San Antonio for what they've done since then. There's really dramatic changes happening in that city. But trails need to be connected. Sidewalks need to be functional. And then people need to be able to access the stores. This map from Department of Ag shows the places where there's no cars and no supermarket stores within 1 mile. The number of people who don't have access to a car or a supermarket within 1 mile. And you can see, again, that southeast region of the United States particularly hard hit in terms of this food desert issue. And then, of course, we know that 50% of total daily energy intake can be consumed at school, so school food matters. It matters a lot. Starting to get better, the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act made a huge difference, but there's a lot more that we can be doing, especially on the implementation side on that one. So let's think about what are some of the policy approaches we can use to address healthy eating and active living. I'm going to go through these very quickly because I know Ken and Carrie have a lot more to say on that. So we can increase active transportation. We can do that by making roads and paths safer for bicyclists. That can be through long-term planning. That can be through complete streets. It can be through connecting sidewalks. I put in here these little orange boxes in my slides that talk about co-benefits, because whenever we talk about obesity prevention, we tend to focus down on obesity prevention. We think about what does it mean to address the issue of obesity, but the fact is that these policies, they don't just affect obesity, they affect the health of our communities overall, and that can mean climate, that can mean the economies, that can mean the level of academic achievement, it can mean the level of public safety, it can mean the hunger in a community. And so when I put these boxes in here, and I won't talk about them, but I encourage you to think about how these policies have an impact above and beyond just the obesity within a community. We can also think about land use. So we can look at urban design and land use plans to make sure that mixed use retail and residential areas exist so that people can live and work and play and shop all within the same area. They can get access to foods. They can walk to transit. I will point out this one because I think it's really cool and I don't think it's very intuitive. Pedestrians and bicyclists shop and spend more per customer than drivers. So from an economic perspective, this is a really good argument for mixed-use development in communities. We can build open spaces, parks, places for recreation. That can mean building new ones. It can mean renovating. It can mean cleaning. It can mean painting the benches so that they're more appealing in a park. It can mean cutting the trees so that the sight lines allow for safer play. There's a number of ways to improve a park space. We can look at physical activity in and near schools. So school policies regarding how much physical activity there is, but also what a community can do in terms of access and funding around the school to maintain gyms, to allow volunteers to support recess breaks, and to offer curricula that can be used during the day for short breaks. There's also, on the way to school, the Safe Routes to School program. There's tremendous funding out there that's not being tapped from the U.S. Department of Transportation for Safe Routes to School programs. And one of our challenges is to get that money from the federal government to the community so that it can be used to implement programs that allow kids to walk and bike safely to school. The money is there. And then joint use agreements. These are a really hot topic right now, and I'm guessing a lot of you have probably heard about them or been a part of this debate. But the idea is that we should talk about schools as community facilities, and we should think about community facilities as places for schools to access. And if there's a playground and it's locked after 5 p.m. every day, what does that mean for the health of our children? How do we make sure that those places are accessible and open in a way that's safe and legal, and it is legal, and there are liability protections out there. to allow communities to access these resources and allow children to have these places and families to have these places to take their children. And then we get into the food side of things. So we can think about nutrition in schools. We can make sure that kids have appealing, healthy food and beverage choices in schools. And a beverage is a key one. You know, I've been thinking more about this water access issue, and healthy, hunger-free kids has now required that that schools offer access to water. But I think it's one that sometimes gets lost in the shuffle. And so thinking about implementation of these new policies that are out there and how schools can improve the offerings that they give to our children is an important one. And then there's food access in terms of getting local foods into the hands of consumers. We know this has economic co-benefits, although I didn't put it on the slides, but supporting farmers markets, creating incentives for them to locate near communities where there are food deserts, and then also encouraging those markets to accept the benefits, WIC and SNAP, in a way that that allows more people to access those foods, addressing, again, those disparity issues. Community gardens, same story there. And then I think this is the last one I've included today, food and beverage marketing. So we have to think a lot about how marketing plays a role in the choices that families are making. And we have to think about, as communities, what we can do to impact this. And I know there's sensitivities here, First Amendment sensitivities in particular. But when you think about vending machines, you know, that's not a tough one to think about how vending machines should be marketed, what kids should have access to. Should a Coca-Cola sign be on the sports banner outside the football stadium? You know, we can ask those questions, and it's a realistic thing to do so. All that being said, Leadership for Healthy Communities has tremendous resources to support policymakers and communities that are looking to do this work. And I apologize I didn't bring my normal pile of materials to show off, but a lot of the information that I've presented today comes from our Action Strategies Toolkit, which is about a 100-page book that lays out policy approaches that can be considered for addressing obesity. Gives case studies of communities that have done it, and gives resources to help communities, including model policies, discussions of liability issues, all sorts of useful information. So it's a great resource. It's available on our website, which is leadershipforhealthycommunities.org. Another great, two other great resources that we have out right now are the Making the Connection Policy Brief series, which talks about those co-benefits, which really goes into what are the economic co-benefits of childhood obesity. And as a community, if you're trying to address obesity, here are some of the arguments, the economic arguments that can be used, and here are the economic co-benefits that you get from these issues, everything from increased property values to increased shopping to supporting local farmers. And last but not least, brand new brief, really, really helpful, especially in budget times like this, Obesity Prevention on a Budget, which lists a series of policies that can be considered in tough budgetary times. So I think I went way faster than my 20 minutes, but I think that's great because I want to give you guys time to talk about what you're doing at the local level.
Okay, next is Ken Smith, and he is the lead senior analyst for chronic disease and environmental health at the National Association of County and City Health Officials. And on an aside, before I formally introduce him, I want to let you know that Ken has been away for a lengthy vacation, so he is fully rested and mellow, I believe, but still ready to go. It sounded like he had an enjoyable time, and I'm a little bit jealous. But anyway, Ken received his doctorate from the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, where he studied population economics. He has over 10 years of experience as a researcher with expertise in healthcare, financing, applied econometric methods, program evaluation and design, and health professional workforce issues. More recently, he was the director of chronic disease prevention for the Philadelphia Public Health Department, where he helped facilitate policy, systems, and environmental change to improve access to healthy, affordable produce and safe spaces for physical activity and play. As director, Dr. Smith was the principal investigator for Steps to a Healthier Philadelphia Initiative and the project director for the Kellogg Foundation-funded Food and Fitness Initiative. As lead senior analyst for NACHO, Dr. Smith provides technical assistance to NACHO members, like myself, on land use and transportation planning and chronic disease prevention and management. Technical assistance provision includes one-on-one consultations, training and information, provision on site visits, facilitated peer-to-peer mentorship, policy briefs development, and webinar trainings. He provides technical assistance to local health departments involved in the CDC-funded ACHIEVE initiative, the Pew Charitable Trust-funded NACHO HIPHIA Mentorship Program, and the RWJ-funded Leadership for Healthy Communities Initiative, including training local health officers and key staff on community assessment and planning. Dr. Smith also supports NACHO's government affairs staff in policy development and advocacy around chronic disease prevention and healthy community design. I think, like everyone in a national association, he has many hats to wear and is doing them all quite successfully. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Ken Smith.